the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
All right, glad you're here, everyone. Brian Kilmeade Show, historic week, big time. I love the fact that no one had it right. He had a sense, he had a feeling, he had a hope, but no one had it right. What I'm talking about is the Republican sensational showing. And it starts with the White House with the overwhelming victory, and it goes to the House. And right now it looks, who knows, but by almost all experts say they're going to hold on to it. They're just trying to find out the margins. They got to get to 218. They're around 206. In the Senate, they got 52. They're going to come up on 53 as soon as Casey realizes he lost to McCormick. So that'll come in at 53. Sadly, it looks like Nevada went the other direction. But the big story is two things. How did Donald Trump do it? Number two, what will his cabinet look like? What will his staff look like? They got to hire like 4,000 people. We're going to focus on about 12. And then, where do the Democrats go from here? The finger pointing, the soap opera element to it, the Biden camp, the Harris camp, the Obama camp, the Clinton camp, all with the wrong message that Americans didn't want. Forget what Donald Trump wanted. America didn't want. This hour, we're going to be joined by Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. Michael Whatley in 15 minutes. He is the RNC chair. What a success story he wrote. And Eli Lake is here now. Fantastic columnist with the Free Press, contributing editor of Contempora on commentary. At Commentary and host of the Reeducation Podcast. Eli, welcome back. Your thoughts about this election?
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. My thought is that this was a rebuke of not just the Democratic Party, it was a rebuke of the legacy media, rebuke of American elites. And it was a long time coming because that was the result that a lot of us thought would happen in 2022, and I think it was delayed 2 years, but this is the message.
And I think also the fact that it was delayed 2 years and Joe Biden felt like he was successful, that's why he stayed. I mean, if there was a red wave, there would have been no sentiment to keep him around. I will tell you this, what I found the most interesting and the most unifying is Trump increased his take with the Latino vote by four. For those under 50,000, it makes under 50,000, he got 50% of the vote. It was at 41%. For blacks in America, he got 20% of the vote. It was Romney got 8. In terms of voters, young voters, people under 29, he got 42% of the vote. So it's hard to marginalize and ridicule Trump voters without ridiculing the country, Eli.
Well, I mean, listen, there is a little bit of a meltdown going on right now. I think that those of us who, for, you know, varying degrees of enthusiasm and for many different reasons are happy and satisfied with the results of the election, it's time for our side to show a little grace. You know, I understand that, you know, people are going to be happy and they want to celebrate. But, you know, right now they're just going through the stages of grief. We've all seen the responses on MSNBC and The View, and these are ridiculous things. They lost. Elections matter. This is one of the most important elections of my lifetime. I think it's up there with 1980, and it's up there with 2008 when Barack Obama changed the map and changed our country. And, you know, the implications we're going to be studying for years and years and years. This is a really big deal.
It is.
America just changed course. And I think it changed course because Donald Trump is not an infection of the body politic. That was the theory of the case for 8 years for the so-called resistance, the Democrats, the NGO groups that are, like, you know, very much committed and wedded to progressive agenda. And of course, many in my profession of the legacy elite press. Donald Trump is, and I did a podcast on this right before the election, he is like standing on the shoulders of other great politicians who were terrific BS artists. And that's what Trump is. He is a showman. He is a salesman. He's somebody, and if you're going to say that he's a Russian agent, that he's a fascist, it doesn't land. Americans know him very well. They don't just know Trump very well because he's been a celebrity for more than half a century. They know the type. It's somebody, you know, Bill Clinton and Ronald Reagan, very similar. And that is something I think that the Democrats didn't understand, because they tried to portray him as somebody who was going to fundamentally change our country. And what Donald Trump is not, as I said, he's not an infection of the body politic. He is a mirror. He is who we are. And that is what they didn't understand. And hopefully now they will get it. And here's an opportunity, by the way, for Democrats to do a lot of things potentially that they have said they've wanted to do for years, whether that's infrastructure, having policies that address the working class. It doesn't have to be, 4 years of tears for the Democratic Party. I think it will be for some, but it doesn't have to be for the whole party. There are a lot of people who are more moderate, Democrats who themselves were sick of defund the police. They were sick of, the whole trans agenda. And, I think Donald Trump is a guy who they could definitely work with. And here's an opportunity. This is an astounding election result. It is a blowout win. Now, learn from it.
So I want to talk about another area of expertise, and that's the Middle East. Yeah. So the prime minister fires his defense minister the day of the election, when he knows it's going to be overwhelming news the other direction. Do you think the timing meant everything?
Well, I can't. I mean, there's a lot I don't know looking at that. I think that there was a rivalry we knew about between Golan and Netanyahu. I think Bibi is sort of like, now, we're going to settle all family business. And now that, Trump has won, I think it's actually pretty good for letting Netanyahu finish the job in the Middle East. And, remember, Trump said at one point in his convention speech, if I win, those American hostages better come home before I take the oath of office. I don't think he was kidding around. I think that, by the way, if you're the supreme leader of Iran right now, Brian, you've got to be quaking in your boots. That he made a huge mistake. If you come at the king, you best not miss. This is a guy, the Iranians tried to kill Donald Trump, and now he's the next president. I don't think it's going to be working out very well for them.
One of the headlines on FoxNews.com is Iran terrified of the Trump presidency. But this is
they
so key.
Be.
First off, a couple of days ago, they guaranteed they'll hit back and crack the teeth of the Israelis. They're going to do that, Eli Lake, if the reports are correct, without any defense system, because it was blown up by the Israeli attack. And the radar that they used to guide their missiles into Israel was blown up in Syria and Iraq. If these reports are correct, this has to be just rhetoric.
They're in meltdown, too. They're like Sonny Hostin at The View. They don't know what they did. They're going through the various stages. I think you're right. It is rhetoric. It's very important for a regime like that, Brian, that, you're talking about, they have to always have this, because they are a fascist tyranny, they have to persuade both their adversaries and their population that, kind of history is on their side. They're on the right side of history. And it doesn't look like that in the last month. So you have to sort of say these things to sort of say, no, we're going to come back bigger and stronger than ever. But I'm with you. I think it looks like rhetoric at this point. And we'll see what happens. And by the way, the supreme leader is an old man, and allegedly he's very sick. We know that for 20 years he's been dealing with some kind of cancer. So if he goes and there's a succession crisis, I mean, I think it's a very vulnerable time for that regime. And I think there's a more of a chance, I don't know what Trump will do, but there's a better chance that Trump will see that as an opportunity maybe to get something better. Certainly that's what the Israelis want. And that's what the Iranian people want, by the way. Look at, we can see all of this. There's every time we think that Iranian protest movement is down and out, despite incredible violence, repression, torture from the regime, they come back. They came back this week, we saw, with this woman at Tehran University. So I'm very optimistic on this for the first time in a long time.
And I know the first caller that called to President Trump to congratulate him was MBS. Is that significant, Eli?
Yeah, I think that's right. I know that Netanyahu was an early phone call, too. Yeah.
So is that significant?
Oh, yeah. It's very significant. Remember, Biden came into office, and he and the Democrats promised to make MBS a pariah for MBS's role in having a Washington Post columnist and also kind of a, agent of Qatari influence named Jamal Khashoggi. Killed in an awful and brutal way. And I don't think anybody, is condoning that. But, it was an overkill from the Democrats. I might add, led by the Washington Post, another institution in meltdown and crisis. And now you've got Trump, who always had a good relationship with MBS, and I think he can really try and sort of set that relationship back on the right track, which is something the Biden administration has tried to do for 2 years. But MBS, I think, sort of like, hey, you guys really tried to screw me. And now you got Trump back in there. I think there's a lot of things that can open up, including a Saudi-Israel, final kind of diplomatic breakthrough, expanding the Abraham Accords. That would be very big as well. And Israel has proved that it's not a paper tiger. Despite October 7th, it has restored deterrence. It's proved it's powerful. It's proved that its enemies should fear Israeli retaliation if it pulls something like that. So things are looking very good in that respect. The one thing I'm concerned about is the rhetoric from the Republican side and Trump sometimes regarding Ukraine and Russia. Russia is not interested at this point in ending the war. So I don't think I think that that's potentially a problem. And I think the key point here that I think, you know, our side on the center right should be making is the war against Iran and the war against Russia are related. Iran and Russia and China and North Korea are the new axis of dirtbags. They all are helping each other. Iran is providing the drones and the missiles used to kill Ukrainian civilians. So when Israel does something to strike Iran, that's a strike for Ukrainian freedom, too.
Gotcha.
And when Ukraine does something against Russia, that's a strike for Israel's war against the forces that are trying to destroy it. So in my view, like, this is all like
I have to leave it there. I got to run, come up against a break. But there's so much to talk about. All these parts are continued and Trump and are connected. And Trump has an opportunity to make a real difference because this administration was terrible on it. Eli, thank you. Coming up next, Michael Whatley, RNC chair, and then Lieutenant Colonel Alan West.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The world of business moves fast. Stay on top of it with the Fox Business Rundown. Listen to the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Democrats like me always said, you know, Donald Trump has never won the popular vote. Well, he's going to win the popular vote. Donald Trump is not a winner. Well, he was a big winner. I mean, it hurts me to say that, but he was a big winner. So what are my Republican colleagues going to take away from that? This is not like, is this the Donald Trump with whom we lost the Senate majority? Is this Donald Trump with whom we lost the House? No, this is Donald Trump with whom we win big time. So whatever Adam Kinzinger instinct, Liz Cheney instinct existed in the Republican Party, that's gone. That's gone. Donald Trump owns these guys.
Connecticut Congressman Jim Himes. Just reality. It's almost something Michael Whatley would say. He's the RNC chair, and he's helped make it possible. Michael, congratulations. Your vision was the right vision. Your work ethic was incredible. The result, was it – I know this is what you hoped for. Was it more than you were expecting?
We knew that this was on the table. We knew that this was a possibility. You know, I think that if there's anything that surprised me, it's the fact that we won the popular vote so resoundingly. You know, we felt in every one of the battleground states we had a really good shot, a really good opportunity to win. You know, for him to run the table, get that popular vote, really very satisfying. And then, of course, to be able to flip the Senate and hold on to the House, that's a really, really great night for America.
You need 218 to get to the House. How confident are you? I know you want to, but how confident are you that the finally tallies will put you there? And what number do you think you'll end up with?
You know, I spoke with Speaker Johnson the other night, and, you know, we're feeling cautiously optimistic that we're going to be able to hold on to it with a small lead. You know, and we'll obviously have to see kind of how this pans out down the stretch. And I have, you know, legal teams and recount teams ready to go across the country to make sure that, you know, the counts that are taking place right now are being done correctly, and that if we go into recount mode, that we'll have those covered as well. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see how these things final out, but we feel pretty upbeat.
It looks like you gained with every portion of the country, from Asians to Hispanics to black men and young voters. Do you know where you went down? White men. white population, minus two. So it's pretty hard to call you guys a white-only party when it's the only area in which you're losing.
Yeah, I think that the seismic shift that we saw in black voters, Hispanic voters, Asian American voters, is really a testament to the president's outreach into those communities. You know, there were a lot of people who were asking, why in the world are you doing an event in downtown Philadelphia? Why are you going to the Bronx? Why are you guys doing events in Miami? Why are you doing events in Atlanta? Why are you going to downtown Chicago? And you know, this is a president, and now a president-elect, who is very willing to go talk to people where they are, talk to them about the issues that they care about. When you look at what he did on all of the alternative platforms, from Joe Rogan and Elon Musk to all of the other podcasts that he did, the fact that he went and sat down with the National Association of Black Journalists for a very hostile interview and then got a standing ovation afterwards. You know, these are things that he has done because his message, his core message, translates to every single group. You know, we are going to have a strong economy. We're going to have a strong southern border, and we are going to be strong enough, you know, to protect our interests at home and abroad. It's really hard to argue against that, and it affects every single American family.
What about you, Michael? What's next for you? Are you interested in joining the administration?
You know, we will have that conversation. Right now, I am very focused on making sure that we get these last House races called. We're you know, going to have the certification that we need to get done in Arizona and Nevada. I want to make sure that all goes very, very smooth. So we still have dust settling right now, and I want to make very sure that we get this thing done and buttoned up and make sure that everything is officially lined up with T's crossed and I's dotted so that on January 20th, we can all go to Washington, D.C. and enjoy ourselves.
But you hope to be asked, or you hope there's a position there? Is that something you want to do next in your career?
You know, I am not focused on that right now. I really, truly just want to make sure we get these elections locked in here. You know, it's fantastic that the press has called these, but we've got a lot of work to do to get that buttoned up.
What's it going to take for McCormick to win? They seem to think there's no path for Casey just being a sore loser.
Well, you got to officially get 100% of the ballots counted first, and that's why we've got teams on the ground right now that are in those polling locations, you know, going through the mail ballots and the provisionals. You know, the sausage making on elections is pretty intense. And then, you know, once they have 100% of the count, then they will go do an official canvass. And then at that point, you know, Casey could probably ask for a recount. We certainly hope he won't, but he may. You know, so there is some process that we have to go through here. And I want to make absolutely sure that we don't drop any balls as we're going through it.
And real quick, do you won Nevada, you think? You haven't been given it yet.
Yeah, we feel very good about Nevada. And so we're kind of going through the last mail ballots that are being put out there. But I think that this is a lead that's going to hold and we're going to sustain.
All right. Michael Wiley, congratulations again. And I think even Democrats would just be in awe of what you guys pulled off.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
In our nation, we owe loyalty not to a president or a party, but to the Constitution of the United States. And loyalty to our conscience and to our God. My allegiance to all three is why I am here to say, while I concede this election, I do not concede the fight that fueled this campaign.
You should have, because the fight was ridiculous. It was 107 days. You spent $1 billion, and you had the worst showing ever because you were a candidate that could read a prompter but couldn't do an interview. Never held a press conference. Yet she went in front of a large crowd 24 hours after she lost and told everyone, I'm going to keep fighting. I don't know. I don't even think Democrats want you to keep fighting. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West is with us now, Dallas County Republican Party Chair, American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director. Colonel, I think a lot of this success story for Republicans was written when Texas started exporting their illegals. and let everyone feel the pain that you guys have been feeling. And Chicago, Philadelphia, New York, San Francisco, they were, and sadly, Denver, Aurora, they were starting to feel the pain that you guys were talking about. Don't you think that was a turning point?
I think that that had a lot to do with it, Brian, but I think a bigger turning point was when she sat there on The View and Sonny Hostin asked her, what would you do differently for the Biden administration? She said, I can't think of anything. I have no regrets. But when I go back to her speech yesterday, when she stands up there and says that she has an oath to the Constitution, well, then why did she allow for open borders? The Constitution says very clearly you're supposed to protect the nation's sovereignty. You're not supposed to allow this invasion of people that shouldn't be here. And then she talks about her conscience and, you know, her love of God. Well, when the guy stood up at her rally and said, Jesus is Lord, Christ is King, she said, you're at the wrong rally. So this is a person, they have no true north. They have no core values whatsoever. And when she says we're going to continue to fight for, you know, the things that we stood up for in this campaign, America rejected it. Donald Trump, when was the last time a Republican won the popular vote? And so this came on her watch. And as you just articulate, $1 billion, you could not get your message out because you didn't have a message. So the cloud is gone. Mm-hmm. Kamala Harris's cloud has been blown over.
She underachieved as a vice president, turned down the number one assignment, which was the border. She didn't fail. She didn't try. And she, by all intents and purposes, was terrible to her staff, didn't work hard. Anytime she had a moment, she went back out to California. So I think she should realize she's done. But we'll see. If Democrats don't want her around, the guy that made sense, and I know Republicans are iffy about him, I always were positive about him, Joe Manchin, because he would buck his own party when they were being ridiculous. He did sign the Inflation Reduction Act, but did get some concessions in it. Here's what he said he saw, cut six.
Donald Trump didn't win just with the MAGA. He won with the centrist, the common sense, the independents in the middle. He was able to have a program that basically more people bought in than what Kamala did. That's the middle. The power of the middle is unbelievable. I just hope when they get to Washington, they remember how they got there. They got there by appealing to reasonable, responsible, sensible people that are in the middle. I'm in the middle. A lot of people. Democrats have become homeless, and a lot of Republicans became homeless. And we weren't Washington Democrats. We weren't Republican Democrats, but we wanted to get things done. You get things done from the middle.
So your thoughts about that, where we're at today, and how he didn't run as a Reagan conservative, Trump. He does a lot of things his own way within the Republican Party. So where do you think this party's at right now?
I think this party is at a point where it's making connection with groups and demographics that it's never engaged with before. I think that if you stick to principles and values and talk along those lines and not so much about party affiliation, you're going to win people. That's exactly what Ronald Reagan did. I mean, morning in America, and Ronald Reagan was the type of person who said, here I am, this is what I stand for, this is what I believe in, this is what I want to do for you, and people rallied to that. And I think that Donald Trump has done the exact same thing. I mean, going and putting on a McDonald's uniform, an apron, and going and putting on the garbage vest and getting into a garbage truck. Those were brilliant things. I mean, it's completely different from Michael Dukakis, you know, with that fake phony photo of him riding around in an M1 tank. It came off as genuine, and he made that connection with people. So I think that the Republican Party today is a party that is reaching out to people and engaging people based upon what they want, their principles and values, and what can be better for them and their families.
So if you look right now at the Hispanic vote, in 2016, Trump had 29%. Now he's got 45%. In 2016, with people incomes under 50,000, he had 41%. Now he's got 50%. For black men, he was at 13%. Now he's at 20%. For young people under 30, he had 37%. Now he's got 42%. In New York, he got 43% of those under 30, which when you look overall, he was within 10 points of winning. Obviously, he's not going to win here yet, but he improved in every borough. I think Republicans should wake up and understand that they have a shot in the urban environment. Number two, I know she got 63% in Chicago. Biden got 84%. So the people in inner cities know they're being let down. and they've been taken for granted. This is a historic opportunity, and you can't wait another year and a half to do it. I think you got to go back to the barbershops. You got to go back to these areas right away. You got to go into Chicago. What do you need? You got to talk about the security, engage these mayors. Oftentimes, they're not as political as their governors. And I think there's got to be a plan for that. Do you think that there's a hope that there is?
Well, I do hope that there is, because one of the things that I've always said is that the greatest amount of failure, the greatest indication of failure, you know, progressive, socialist, leftist policies are in our major urban population centers. And you cannot continue to seed over that ground, seed over that territory, and not even show up. And that's what, quote unquote, Republican political consultants have been telling people for so long. Now we have broken that paradigm. And as a matter of fact, next weekend, I'll be down in South Dallas to have a town hall event there, because it's not just about an election cycle. It's about continuing that engagement, continue to open up the conversations. And now we need to start growing our talent in these urban Black Hispanic communities, because we need to run them for city councils. We need to run them for school boards and all of these different positions, because that's where you're going to be able to make a difference.
Absolutely. That I think it's the mayor of Dallas who switched parties, wasn't it?
Yeah, Mayor Eric Johnson. And, you know, hopefully he will continue to be a part of that engagement and continue to grow that wave that we see happening in our major urban population centers. So, yeah, you got to go where people are. And think about this. I mean, Donald Trump made great incursions 4 years ago into the Rio Grande Valley. And this time in the Rio Grande Valley, he won complete counties: Cameron County, Hidalgo County, Starr County. George Soros dumped money into Cameron and Hidalgo counties to try to block down there. But now we see that those counties have gone red. Zapata County went red for the first time in 100 years, 4 years ago. So we're seeing the value of us engaging in these communities, because they do align with our constitutional conservative values.
I see opportunity, I think, as an American, opportunity. So, well, all of a sudden people are going to say, I'm going to go for the upper. I want people to go from the middle class vote, the working class vote, the billionaire vote. I'm tired of hearing the Black vote, the Latino vote. I'm tired of it. I just want to go. Americans should be lined up for their neighborhoods, perhaps, their state, what their needs are. You got to listen. But the generic conversation that non-pollsters are having, the people that, you know, on a daily basis, just helps categorize a country, and I think we're sick of it. Listen to this, though, on that horrible station MSNBC, who cannot find their way, and they cannot rationalize what happened with this election. Cut 20.
Donald Trump knows our country better than we do. He figured out that anger and, frankly, fear were way more powerful than appealing to people's better angels. Whether you're afraid of immigrants or afraid of people who are trans,
we cannot ignore there is still a lot of racism and gender bias in this country. Kamala Harris is a woman of color in an interracial marriage and running as a woman to be the head of state. That is something a lot of Americans are not ready to deal with.
Do you believe that's right? Exactly. And if it wasn't for the interracial marriage, I think she would have won in a landslide.
Well, you know, my oldest daughter is in an interracial marriage, and both of them voted for Donald Trump. So, and her husband's from Alabama, which causes me consternation because I went to the University of Tennessee. But, you know, all of that aside, they just didn't get the memo, Brian, and they're going to continue to double and triple down and say, it's our fault. It's our problem. We just didn't get it. We're still racist, misogynist, homophobes, transphobes, disophobe, thatophobe. We're still, you know, extremists. Make America Great Again is an extremist logo. We're Hitler. We're Nazis. That's why they're going to keep losing. Because they're talking in their little echo chamber, and they're not hearing that the American people said, we just want safety and security. We want better economic opportunities. We want better educational opportunities. We don't want to pay a whole lot of money for gasoline and all of these different types of things. We don't want criminals on our streets. But they're still talking about the same old stuff. And if they continue to go down that path in the left, the Democrat Party is going to be decimated going forward.
It is. They got to help the country and go center left. That's it. Be left. But you can't be extreme left or afraid of the left, because if you get elected, we're all doomed. We saw that for the last 4 years. Colonel, thanks so much.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thank you, Brian.
All right, 1-866-408-7669. If you want to write me, back at work, briankilmeade.com. You go there and just click on comments, and it'll come to me. We have a lot to discuss, too. I want you to hear, I want to go over the transition. Who could be where, and what do you think? Who would you hope to see in the cabinet? Maybe even Trump is not thinking about yet.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
One of the things I think folks forget about is President Trump had some A-listers, some really great people in his first administration. He had some very good picks. And quite frankly, I've been around and some of those people have said, I want to come back and I want to help you again, President Trump. Let's finish the job of what we started. And so that's really exciting. There's some people that will be returning. And as you referenced before, there'll be new people joining the mix, not just kind of the big names that you'd see or even some of the names that you put on the screen there. But again, have some Democrats, independents, people from the business community. And this is the good thing. Everybody wants to join. Everybody wants to be a part of what President Trump is going to build back.
And they got to pick the right people. I think they got a great shot. They got to do it quick and then line up these confirmations. You talk to Schumer, find out what it's going to take to get quick confirmation. It really bothers me, hurts the country when it takes forever to even confirm an ambassador. Woody Johnson, I think, waited 8 months. The owner of the Jets, he owns Johnson & Johnson. Why is he waiting almost a year to get that job? You know, the relations with the UK, it's not a ceremonial position. You actually do stuff, especially the one in Russia, China. I mean, these are impactful spots. And then you have real stuff. Secretary of Defense, you got to confirm. Secretary of State, Marco Rubio is looked at as one of the leaders as Secretary of State. I think he'd be great. I think he'd be great. And hopefully the president would listen to, the president-elect would listen to him, because I love his instincts on this. Here's him last night, cut 19.
I have a job to do now. I'm in the Senate. I have an opportunity to serve there, and he's going to need people in the Senate to help carry that agenda, because this one thing is to win an election, but then you got to do something with it. There's a mandate here. They're telling us, go up there and fix these things, and we have to do that. If we don't do that, then all this was for naught. So he has to have people in the Senate to help, and maybe that's the best place for me to serve. Maybe there's some other capacity. I really don't know, because we just came from that victory. I haven't even 24 hours yet. And but look, Donald Trump has always made great choices. Look how he did with vice president. Look how he's done with the people in his campaign. I mean, he put together a tremendous campaign. They all deserve a lot of credit. And he picked every single one of these people that worked for him. So he'll have great choices. He's got great people to pick from, and he needs good people in the Senate and in the House.
Look for Ben Carson to come back, maybe do something besides HUD. He's got that medical expertise, best surgeon in the world at one point for the brain. Then you have Stephen Miller will get something. Jason Miller, I hope, would get something. They put their time in. Rubio, as I mentioned, would be a great Secretary of State. Michael Waltz would be a great Secretary of Defense. Matt Whitaker was a good temporary Attorney General. Why not give him the job full time? Vivek will do something, but he's got to do something where he can have an impact and a visibility, and he could use verbal skills. Scott Jennings on CNN is a fantastic fighter for the president's agenda. I don't even think they know each other. But, man, would he be good as a press secretary? Caroline Levitt would be great, too. Mark Morgan would be fantastic. He was at the border. Tom Homan, Robert O'Brien, Mike Pompeo, John Radcliffe, Chris LaCivita. They say Governor Jeff Landry in Los Angeles, in Louisiana, Eric Schmidt, Missouri senator. These are just some of the names I'm hearing. Cynthia in Florida. Hey, Cynthia.
Morning, Brian. Haven't talked to you in 20 years. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling me back. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind is I'm a very conservative Democrat. I haven't voted for a Democrat. Well, put it this way. I always said I'd vote for the devil if he ran as a Democrat, and then Mr. and Mrs. Satan actually did in 1992, and that's when I started getting serious about vetting candidates and found only one Democrat worthy of trust. Joe Manchin. Thank you for giving him his due. Nobody ever talks about him.
I like him.
Lifts him up and raises him up. He's been marginalized because he goes against the narrative.
Hey, Cynthia, really going to love it Saturday night, 9 o'clock Eastern time. He's going to be one of my lead guests.
Thank you. Our country needs him to have more of a spotlight. We need to redirect the thinking of regular, run-of-the-mill, everyday Democrats who still think that the party is what it always was. It's not. My daddy was an operative in Illinois for Senator Paul Simon, Congressman Costello, and Price, and every down-ticket candidate for as long as I can remember. I used to sit on their laps when they'd sit around the kitchen table and play with my paper dolls while they'd plot. You all think that they treat Republicans bad? You ought to see how they treat Democrats who step out of line.
I hear you. Cynthia, thank you. Dave, Tallahassee. Dave.
Hi. And the idea for Attorney General?
Yep.
Trey Gowdy.
I don't think he wants it. I think he wants to stay here, but I would love it. I would absolutely love it. The good news is the Attorney General won't have to deal with the Trump cases because it looks like they're going away on their own. But Trey Gowdy would be fantastic. I think he's got a great sense of justice. I don't think he would leave, though. Anybody else you'd like to see in the cabinet?
Well, I would like to see.
How about Kevin McCarthy? Would you like to see Kevin McCarthy in there? RFK Jr. will be. How about
RFK,
Doug Burgum?
You know, the one that's going to interest me is Elon Musk.
Oh, Elon Musk, yes.
I want to see, you know, what kind of constructive things he does do.
Well, number one, we're going to fully support his space program, his Starlink program. I would love him to stop directing it to help Russia. That is a accusation that is true. He's helping Ukraine, too. But listen, Russia's a bad guy in this. We cannot let them use this satellite link. I think that he is going to be basically the czar of responsible spending. And I think he's going to be great at it. And he's going to bring other people in that are great at it. He's going to ask for help. And he likes to get things done. Elon gets everybody excited. I was listening to Democrats talk, and they just said, how did we lose that guy? I know exactly how I lost that guy. You started suing him because you didn't like the fact that he bought Twitter and exposed how the CIA, the FBI, members of Congress on the Democratic side were colluding to shadow ban the president and his accounts, as well as help hold back stories like the laptop ban. It exposed everything. Hey, by the way, don't forget Saturday night, 9 o'clock. I'm going to be on One Nation. Amongst my guests is also going to be Senator Tom Cotton. Why did he pull himself out of the running? We'll discuss that and so much more. And Robert Dobby, we're still formulating the show, but you're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. An extremely exciting week. So glad you're here.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade coming to you from Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world, where there's been very, very few riots, people upset, more people walking around with MAGA hats than not. And remember how different it was in 2016. Yesterday, in fact, when I got to work, there was some unrest. I said, what was going on over there? Why are the cops? And they said they were pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas, pro-Hezbollah. And they burned an Israeli flag and they held the Hezbollah flag, which if you're holding a terrorist flag, I really think you should be arrested. I'm pretty sure that's provocative and anti-American. But this hour, we're going to be joined by one of the deepest thinkers, great, most eloquent speakers, Douglas Murray of National Review. I got to get his perspective overseas about the impact of this massive win for Donald Trump, as well as the Republicans in the Senate. They flip it, and they're about to hold on to the House. And we have a special guest standing by, Elina Valtonen. She's Finland's foreign minister. I got to get the reaction from for our newest NATO member, as well as Europe, to Donald Trump coming back. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
One of the things I think folks forget about is President Trump had some A-listers, some really great people in his first administration. And quite frankly, I've been around as some of those people have said, I want to come back and I want to help you again, President Trump. Let's finish the job of what we started.
Jason Miller, who's done a great job, too. I hope he gets an offer. What will the new Trump team look like? We examine the rumors and use logic to try and predict the best people for the best spots.
Number two.
One thing that we are clearly already starting to see take place is finger pointing and the blame game. And a lot of that is going to be directed at President Biden. One senior official I just talked to said Biden will hold a lot of blame for it. And frankly, they said he should.
Wow, it's kind of hard for him to finance his library, $300 million. Meltdown, finger-pointing, reevaluation, the Dems in massive tailspin as they try and figure out how and why Harris failed so spectacularly, how the GOP seems to have held the House and flipped the Senate. These, their people, their party has been rejected by their country.
Number one.
Donald Trump didn't win just with the MAGA. He won with the centrist, the common sense, the independents in the middle.
Democrats like me always said, you know, Donald Trump has never won the popular vote. Well, he's going to win the popular vote. Donald Trump is not a winner. Well, he was a big winner. I mean, it hurts me to say that.
And that is Jim Himes of Connecticut. Big winner, got popular vote mandate as he has Congress. Alina Valtonen joins us now. She is the foreign minister of Finland. Alina, welcome. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Alina, first off, your reaction to Donald Trump coming back.
Well, you know, America is our closest partner and ally across the Atlantic. And, of course, we are happy that there was another free election held, and also that the result was, in the sense, clear that there was no, you know, days or weeks of speculation what was going to happen. So we, of course, respect the result of the election and what the Americans wanted to vote. And we are happy and looking forward to working with President Trump and his team.
Right. That seems kind of formal. Do you worry about certain things he's going to do? Are you worried about NATO? Because I know for a fact you should not be. He just wants to make sure everyone does what you guys do and pay their 2% of their GDP.
Yeah. Well, you know, in that respect, we have, well, Finland, of course, we have been pulling our own weight what comes to defense and deterrence. And now as new members in NATO, both Finland and Sweden are committed to contributing to the security of the entire alliance. Finland actually has one of the strongest armies in Europe, not just in relative terms, but in absolute terms. And we are ready and willing to defend not just our own country, but also all allied members of NATO. And I'm actually not that worried about the future of NATO. I'm sure that our American friends understand the importance of friends and allies, because these days it's not a given, and many of the challenges we are facing, especially the threat coming out of Russia, is obviously not just Russia itself, but it's also its closest peers and our partners, such as North Korea, Iran, and China. So I think the free world just has to cooperate even closer than ever before.
I agree with you, because people say, well, they invade Ukraine, they got a rivalry. Well, they're also infiltrating the Georgia elections, Moldova's elections. They're supplying the Houthi rebels with intelligence in order to shut down the Red Sea. I'm sure you even know more than that.
Yeah, well, we have a long list of evidence of hybrid attacks that Russia has been engaged in, either directly itself or through its partners and proxies. So effectively, we do see that we are in the same boat. We have some evidence of them interfering with the U.S. elections, of course, using all sorts of tools in the cyberspace. This is no new news. But now also we have experienced some kinetic sabotage attacks also in many countries. So effectively, it's not just about Ukraine, but clearly we do respect the existence of Ukraine, the sovereignty and the territorial integrity of that nation, and the proud Ukrainians who are defending themselves, which they have the right to. They, of course, at the same time are also defending our way of life, democracy, and the free world, effectively.
So today, have you guys reached out to the former president?
I guess not yet today. We, of course, have congratulated him and also his team. But now I guess obviously we wait for the inauguration of the president, and we'll work with President Biden in the meantime. But having said this, we have, of course, kept our channels open and discussions, have had very good discussions with both teams also during the campaign, and look forward to continuing those.
Alina, we're talking, by the way, the Finland's foreign minister. So when you guys get in there, you wondered about Russia's reaction. For the longest time, they warned you, don't get into NATO. Now you did. You have the longest border with Russia. Have you noticed any activity there?
Well, as I said, there's a long list of hybrid attacks that we have been experiencing in Europe, of course, also Finland. But at the same time, we don't feel threatened as such that, well, as already mentioned, we have a very strong army, a very strong deterrence ourselves. We have invested into that heavily throughout the years. And of course, well, you never know what happens in the future, but we are very much looking forward to net contributing to the overall deterrence of the alliance.
Madam Foreign Minister, you want more cooperation when it comes to trade with us, correct? And you worry about tariffs.
Well, you know, that's so true. And I'm saying this both for the United States and Europe. I think we just need to realize how interlinked both security, the future of our values and also the performance of our economies are. So basically, we need each other, and especially if we are, you know, willing and looking forward to decoupling, well, not decoupling perhaps, but de-risking at least from many autocratic nations, not naming any, then it essentially means that we just have to have a more free trade among our friends and partners. So less protectionism, and I guess all plans what comes to come to tariffs, especially targeted towards close partners and allies, those tend to hurt not just the partners and allies, but the country as well who sets the tariffs. And I don't think we can afford that. It also leads to higher inflation and less jobs, and that's not what we need. Essentially, Finland has been in very close cooperation in technology with the United States. We have a very advanced technology sector, and I look forward to deepening that. I'm sure I'm speaking for the rest of Europe in this regard as well. But I think we need more free trade in more or less everything.
So there's a right now with Ukraine, they presented a victory plan. And we know now the North Koreans sent 10,000 troops into the theater. How's that war going? You got the best view.
Unfortunately, it's not going too well. Most definitely, North Korea sending 10,000 troops into the illegal war that Russia is waging against Ukraine. It's the most serious and dangerous escalation we've experienced in this war in the past 2 years. So definitely, this should be a wake-up call for all of us that we have to be doing more. Finland, of course, and the rest of the Nordic countries in Europe, we are actually together put, we are the second largest provider of military aid for Ukraine. And we are doing our bit. Now, of course, we want to encourage our friends and partners to do the same, because essentially, well, the Ukrainians, of course, deserve peace. They want peace. But peace needs to come at terms which are acceptable for the country, which are lasting and which are fair.
Right. Do we have an anti-military base in Finland? I know Poland's vying to get one.
Yes. Well, we are so happy that we have been able to deepen our cooperation with the United States throughout the past few years. Especially, of course, Finland has been a close partner of NATO for 30 years, and we have been closely cooperating. Now we signed the DCA agreement more or less a year ago with the States, and now we are in the phase of implementing that. So it's very good that we can cooperate on this level as well.
All right, Elena, thanks so much. Best of luck, and hopefully Finland and the U.S. continue to have great relations, not only militarily, but with trade. It's going to be an exciting couple of weeks.
That would be fantastic. Thank you so much. And again, congratulations for having held a free and good election.
Yep. Elina Valtonen, the Finland's foreign minister, back in a moment, 1-866-408-7669. Then I'm really looking forward to this. Douglas Murray's take has his deep thoughts and his predictions often are 100% on the money.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Something that's been on my mind for several months. There was an article in the New York Times in June that said resistance to new Trump administration already forming. And it was this long article about all these groups that were already out there. At that time, they thought he was going to beat Biden, but already planning to try to tie up the administration in court. You've had Jamie Raskin out there already saying, you know, we got to try to tie him up, maybe even before he's sworn in. Today, Sheldon Whitehouse in the Senate put out a press release saying we're going to focus not on progress, but on containing Donald Trump.
And it's ridiculous. And I think what you're seeing, right now is not like last time. Last time it was already Russia really put him there. James Comey in acting. We think he's a Russian stooge. We have all these people. We have a backup plan. We've got to make sure this horrible person doesn't become president, becomes president. Out comes Peter Strzok and all these other clowns and Lisa Page and all the others. And then they later would get caught. That was Scott Jennings making comments. I think Scott Jennings should be a finalist to be the press secretary if he wanted to do it. But he's on CNN, and to CNN's credit, they let him talk. And they book him on every show. But his arguments are really strong. And he's a Bush guy. A lot of Bush people say, yeah, I'm out. Yeah, I'm going to go on The View. No, this guy doesn't. I've never met him. As far as I could tell, I don't think I met him. But since he went on CNN, they give him more and more time because he makes so much sense. And in the beginning, he was so critical of Trump because of some unorthodox thing he said. And I said, okay, typical, another Republican that doesn't like Trump. And, of course, he's on CNN. But something happened along the way. I think he began to see what the American people saw, that Trump is not so much bad, but he's different. And the other thing that I think is hard to digest for the future president, and I've gotten to understand what he means, and I agree with him, stop saying he's not popular. Stop saying like he's forget the personalities, look at the policies. How many people can go to the middle of a field in Pennsylvania and get 50,000 people? How many can do the same in Michigan? How many can do it in Philadelphia? How many can get 20,000 in the Bronx? There's only one guy. Kamala Harris was, a lot of this stuff was manufactured. You bring Beyonce, you got a big crowd. You bring J-Lo, you bring Oprah, it becomes an event. Instead of Donald Trump brings his guys and some victims' families for illegal immigrants that become murderers or are murderers that got to stay here. That's his celebrity. So I think we should stop saying that he's not popular. And now that he wins a popular vote by, it looks like, 5 million, you can't even say the Republicans can't win the popular vote, get rid of the Electoral College. I just love that Chuck Schumer's now saying, I want a spirit of cooperation in order to get things done in Washington. Where was that cooperation when you were the majority leader? You're about to be the minority leader. It would be great. And one thing that you could do, Senator Schumer, as the most powerful Democrat in the Senate, you could say, look, when you put up these guys and these women for confirmation, I'm not going to delay it. I'm not going to wait, just only do it an hour a day and take off Fridays. I might ask my people to stay later to confirm it. That will be beginning of an olive branch. But when you got to wait a year and a half, I mean, we had Darrell Issa in last year, last week. And one thing he said is, you know, I was trade representative. I got nominated to be trade representative. They would not put me and give me a vote. They would not even put me out there and question me. They just leave them in the wings. So what happens is if you're a businessman or woman, or you leave your job, you wait for confirmation. And while you're waiting, you have no job. And then you got to wonder, too, am I going to get confirmation? You know, something's going to happen in the background check, which has happened to many people. Bad divorce, ex-wife angry. Sometimes you do stuff bad. Sometimes you don't, just get accused of it. And your reputation soiled, you don't get the job. So there's huge risk on it. Thomas in Virginia. Hey, Thomas.
Hey, how you doing? Good morning.
What's on your mind?
Hey, First of all, I want to say welcome me back to you, because I haven't listened to you in about a year because I just couldn't handle all the negative stuff out there. So thank goodness I woke up Wednesday, got my office, and I said first thing I did was turn you back on. So
thank
it's
you.
Great to have you back on. Now that we got a new president coming in there that I feel a lot comfortable with. So the reason I wanted to call, I wanted to touch base on some of the cabinet members. I like to see Tom Cotton in there as Secretary of Defense. I've read his book, Sacred Duty, The Old Guard.
Thomas, I did a feature on it. I went to Arlington with him. I think you'll love it. I'm pretty sure you can get it. I'm pretty sure you can get it online. I think you'll love it. But number two, he said no. I heard through people, his kids are too young. It would mean he had to move. He doesn't want to do it. He's got three kids under 10. So, but he thinks he's going to have be able to help a lot in the Senate by taking a leadership position. Is there anybody else?
Yeah, how about Marco Rubio?
I think he's a leader to be Secretary of State. I'd take him way over Rick Grenell. Those two are rumored to be the finalists. I think it would be great.
That'd be good. Another question. Well, you know, my dad's buried in Culpeper National Cemetery. He was a World War II veteran, fought at Iwo, and he also fought in the Korean War. I know he's not there, but it's kind of a tangible for me. I usually visit his grave to show respect every now and then. And Veterans Day is on Monday, so I'll be there Monday, and I'll tell Dad that, hey, Dad, the American people got it right this time.
I hear you. Absolutely. You said Culpeper?
Yeah,
That's the hometown of George Washington.
Exactly. You're exactly right.
Yeah. Well, I did George Washington Secret Six, and the people that rebuilt his house there gave me a plank of the wood. And remember, it was the Culper spy ring, named after Culpeper, George Washington spies. Listen, when we come back, Douglas Murray tells me what the impact will be globally of Donald Trump's win.
That makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
In our nation, we owe loyalty not to a president or a party, but to the Constitution of the United States. And loyalty to our conscience and to our God. My allegiance to all three is why I am here to say, while I concede this election, I do not concede the fight that fueled this campaign.
What did fuel your campaign? Almost nothing, because you got totally blown out. But I got to give Kamala Harris finally the credit. And she had a right to take a shot at President Trump. Trump did not concede the last election, did not stay around for the inauguration. I don't know if she will and Joe Biden will, but my sense is they're going to try to show him up and do that. And it is the right thing to do. But the rest of the speech seemed like a campaign speech. And why did she wait until 4 o'clock in the afternoon to do it? Probably 4:30. Now Joe Biden made a call, congratulated President Trump. That's a good sign. He said, come to the White House. That's another good sign. They should do all those things. It makes the American people and the rest of the world a little less anxiety filled. But I think this is the first time in a mandate since really 2008 when Barack Obama got it. I think that there's, and this is the biggest one for a Republican maybe in my lifetime, maybe Reagan. With me right now is Douglas Murray from the National Review Institute fellow, best-selling author. You got a new book coming out, don't you? Didn't you tell me you had a book coming out?
I do. It's not been announced yet, Brian. Announce it.
Did I just give up top-secret information?
You gave up wildly top-secret information. I can never trust you again.
But just know that I will fully back it.
That's when it's ready. The secret book comes out in the spring. Yeah.
So tell me about this concession. Tell me your view of our election.
Well, I was down in Mar-a-Lago for the night.
Tuesday?
Yes. And it was obviously historic, extraordinary evening.
When did you go, by the way? Were you there before it was decided? Did you see the anxiety level dip?
Yes, very much so. I thought that the moment when things started to really become clear was actually when Republicans managed to flip those Senate seats, because that suggested that this was the wave that
Bernie
Trump
Moreno.
That was the wave the Trump team had been hoping for. At Madison Square Gardens, I was there a couple of weeks earlier,
and
some of the Trump team then said, you know, what we're focusing on is, you know, we also need to get the popular vote. And I thought at the time, I thought maybe that's a bit of a reach. And so it turns out not to be. So I thought that on the night itself, there were a couple of moments when it became clear. I spoke to the president just after the Senate seats flipped, and that was really a very clear indicator that maybe the whole thing was gonna come the Republicans' way. And I was unsure whether we were going to get a result on the night. And then it became clear we would, and everyone headed to the convention center. And the cleanness of the win is something, as you know and your listeners know, is absolutely crucial. And I think some of the relatively diminished howling on the other side is simply because of their just inability to deny that they lost everything. And if it had been remotely closer, or if they could have done their whining about the Electoral College again, they would have done, but they can't. So it was a historic night, and I thought that the president-elect's speech was very, very important to a highly energized room.
Let me, did he write it? Did he have it written down, or he had lived that?
He seemed to have it.
Was there prompters out there?
He seemed to have the skeleton of it written down, the folder he carried on stage. And I thought it was a very, very good speech. I thought that what was then on everyone's minds was, why has there been no word from the Harris campaign other than sending her supporters home? And I did think that by the next morning, and, you know, I mean, I had contact with some of the Democrats. I was saying, why is your candidate not saying anything? This really looks very bitter and unpleasant. My guess is she was drinking a bottle of wine.
Did you hear anybody say that, or is that your?
No, it was my guess. But the fact that she didn't come out till gone for the day after, I do think, as you say, I mean, Trump's had his own issues.
First, it was supposed to be the morning at 10 o'clock. You know that, and then they pushed it to.
That's why I say maybe there was some. But anyway, I think that it showed that she was unable. She does not have it in her. And this is one of the things that made her fundamentally unfit for office anyway. She does not have it in her to have any self-examination. She could have, on the night, said one of my favorite examples is Nixon in 1960. You know, he had a lot of pressure to concede. And he ended up going in front of the press and a room full of his supporters at the hotel in Los Angeles and said at 2:30 in the morning, you know, I know you don't want to hear this, but we've lost this. And and conceded and congratulated his opponent, JFK. She didn't have that in her. And I think it's the final demonstration to the American public. This was somebody who was fundamentally unfit for office, that she couldn't, and she didn't even in her speech late yesterday afternoon, she didn't even have it in her there to have any self-examination of why her campaign was so hideously rejected by the American
public. $1 billion, 107 days, $1 billion. And she wouldn't do an interview, wouldn't give a position. You know what did it for me? When that crime bill, that crime reform in California, Prop 34, was out there, she had an opportunity to say, yeah, you know what? We got to crack down on crime. It's time for the criminals to stay behind bars. Smash and grab was something I didn't anticipate. And contrast it to 2014 when she basically wrote it. But she says, I will not endorse. Yeah. Instinctively, Douglas Murray, I mean, what are you kidding me? This is an opportunity.
It would have been too little too late anyway. It's extremely hard for people to concede the problem when the problem is them. But, you know, at some point the Democrats should recognize that they put up a fantastically awful candidate.
And why did they pick her even as the running mate?
Well, we all
know. Because he said a woman of color, it would knocked it down to three people.
I mean, you would hope that after this the Democrats would do some of the self-examination they did not do after 2016. You know, I always say that the importance of clear results in elections is not just that the winner knows that they've won, but that the loser knows they've lost. If they don't recognize they lost, this was Hillary Clinton's problem and the Democrats' problem for the last 8 years. It was this. You know, we had Russia. We had the impeachment attempts. We had all the false claims about the win in 2016. The Democrats had a chance to actually pivot on the issues. Why were they losing the working class? Why were they losing the ability to even speak to American workers? And they didn't do that switch. They couldn't do it. Can they do it now? We'll see. But of course, it's not the problems of the Democrats are a secondary issue at the moment.
So they say sexist, racist. And I could play a whole bunch of clips, but I'd rather listen to you.
Well,
sexist, racist. Are you kidding me?
Maybe they can grow up after this and realize that one of the problems was that doesn't work anymore. They've tried to insult the American public for long enough. And the American public turns out not to like being insulted all the time. What were you meant to think if you were a white working class guy in America looking at the candidates in this election? on the one hand was Donald Trump and the Republicans saying, they're not just speaking for you, but they're going to do things to improve your lot in life. On the other hand, there's the Democrats simply saying, well, white working class guys, you better prove you're not a racist misogynist and vote for us. That's not a very appealing brand. But they've tried this. There have been some of the usual asylum lunatics of the left who spent the last 24 hours trying to do this again. My suspicion is on the left-wing networks and even the party, the wiser voices will realize this is not how you speak to the public.
Well, aren't we watching? And Doug, isn't this good? We're a self-correcting country, I think, more than anyone
I know. Very
much so.
Very much so.
And so all of a sudden, businesses are going, yeah, we're not doing the DEI thing. We're not getting good people. We can't live under this criteria. Mm. We don't really think we're sexist and racist. People pushing back, fundamental feel for patriotism. I'm relieved. We're coming up on our 250th birthday. It's a big deal. So yeah. President Trump will be there. Say what you want about him. Does anyone think he's not patriotic? Does anyone think he doesn't want to celebrate 250 years? I was worried that we're going to do the 1619 Project and have someone say we're built on the backs of slaves on stolen land. And that's what we were getting. We're not comfortable with that.
No, Americans don't want that. Of course not. But this is what the left has been trying to push on all of us for years now. I'd hope that the result this week is in part a rejection of that anti-American narrative, anti-Western narrative. But look, what Kamala Harris said in her speech yesterday afternoon struck me that there was one thing in particular in it that was worth noting, which was she was still trying to warm up this completely hollow narrative. What we just heard in that excerpt where she said, you know, I will concede the election but will not concede the fight that is behind our campaign. There was no real fight. This was all empty, hollow rhetoric. And she tried it for months and it didn't work and it was soundly rejected. And it's because the American public could tell that she was a hollow person. Right. She said all these things like, we need to go forward into the future, not back into the past. Sorry? What are you going to do about grocery bills? We need to be the change of the people who are the people we're waiting for after we've come back from the past. None of this meant anything.
I know. What about the work? We're not afraid of work. Hard work is good work. What are you talking about? You don't have to tell us about our work ethic.
Who's the campaigner who'd say, I like drifting around, kind of, and prefer the public to kind of drift and
meander.
Let's meander into the future. No, I mean, this was she was such a hideous candidate because it was like watching in the old days a Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox until you can't really see what's on the page anymore. She was a copy of a copy of a copy. And by the time it got to her, none of it really meant anything.
You realize how much healthier it would be for the country to have like a Harold Ford run for president, center-left?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, I understand. There's certain positions you want to do more social spending. Other positions you want to spend on defense. Those are healthy debates. But when you say we have to get rid of oil and gas cars by 2040, and then you make dealerships fill up their cars with electric cars they can't sell, and everyone keep your mouth shut, you're a racist, or you don't like the environment, the militants who gave you this environmental movement— I want you to hear what Joe Manchin said. Somebody's now out of Congress. Cut six.
Donald Trump didn't win just with the MAGA. He won with the centrist, the common sense, the independents in the middle. He was able to have a program that basically more people bought in than what Kamala did. That's the middle. The power of the middle is unbelievable. I just hope when they get to Washington, they remember how they got there. They got there by appealing to reasonable, responsible, sensible people that are in the middle. I'm in the middle. A lot of people, Democrats have become homeless and a lot of Republicans became homeless. And we weren't Washington Democrats. We weren't Republican Democrats, but we wanted to get things done. You get things done from the middle.
He said he didn't vote for her, but people have told me too, conservatives like you, Roger Ailes famously said, you're in the middle of the road, you're roadkill.
Mm.
So how do you feel about that? What he said, when you're conservative, right?
Mm.
So how do you feel about that, Josh? Is he naive?
Well, I think Manchin is a fine man, and it's sad he's out. But he's
going to be on my show on Saturday.
So good. Yeah. So he's not out at all.
Yeah,
he's right at the center of things. He's he's one of the old school Democrats that you could recognize and that the Republicans could do business with in any normal season. He's a fine man. He's a patriot. And he really knows his issues. He would never, if he'd have been the candidate of the Democrats, he would not have waffled on about issue after issue. And he knows his brief. Kamala Harris never knew her brief.
Oh, yeah.
One time she was being asked about inflation. I came away with a very strong view that she does not know what inflation is. I'm pretty confident she doesn't know.
Douglas Murray, I know you do. And in a moment, we're going to take a short time out and come back. Don't move.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Obviously, there is going to be a lot of soul searching and asking a lot of questions in the coming hours and days about what, if anything, could Democrats and the Harris campaign have done differently. One thing that we are clearly already starting to see take place is finger pointing and the blame game. And a lot of that is going to be directed at President Biden. And this is even coming from some folks inside of the Harris campaign. One senior official I just talked to said Biden will hold a lot of blame for it. And frankly, they said he should.
Yeah. So no doubt about it. He wants $300 million for his library. This is going to hurt him. Douglas Murray.
I'm deeply sorry for him for that, obviously. he was looking forward to having a nap in that library.
And I was looking forward for a field trip. I'd love to go to the library because normally I have to go to his garage to get top secret documents. So I think it'll be good to go to one central location. I got to ask you about Iran. How does Iran feel today? You spend so much time in the Middle East and Israel. What do you think the reality is? They blew up their missile defense already. They took out the radar, we know, in Syria and Iraq to help them guide their missiles. What do you think they're thinking with Trump?
I think that if there was any country in which there could have been a landslide for Trump equivalent to or superior to the one that was given by the American public this week, anywhere in the world, it would have been the Israeli public. They are so pro-Trump because they know that the region they're in is the most dangerous region in the world. They don't have the benefit, the Israelis, of having Canadians to their north. And it's a rough neighborhood. And it's a neighborhood in which only strength is respected. And the Harris-Biden administration was a very wobbly ally, actually, to Israel. It was a very wobbly ally.
More wobbly than we know.
More wobbly than
the public
realize. I mean, there was just one thing that was made public the other week, of course, was the intelligence leak from the administration. A minor figure in the administration, but leaked the sites that the Israelis are hoping to strike inside Iran. An ally does not do that. An ally cannot be a leaky ship. And that was all deliberate. I've said many times, but if the Democrats had spent as much time trying to get regime change in Iran as they tried doing regime change in Israel, the mullahs would have fallen by now. The aim of the Biden-Harris administration for the last year has been to get Benjamin Netanyahu out of power in Jerusalem because they see him as being the principal obstacle to peace.
Which is nuts.
It's
by
nuts.
The way.
It's nuts. They say that he's intransigent. No, it's Hamas that's intransigent.
And
it's
Hezbollah and fundamentally
and
Iran.
And Hezbollah and their backer, Iran. Everything about that conflict has been from the United Nations and others. They are weak. They have allowed Hezbollah and Hamas to do what they do, and only President Trump back in the White House can reassert the proper balance of power, which is not Hezbollah peacefully being allowed to continue firing missiles at Israel, but making sure, among other things, that the hostages are got back home and Iran is on the line.
Right away, before he takes office, he wants those hostages home. Douglas Murray, thanks so much.
Thank you.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. It's Brian Kilmeade coming here from Midtown Manhattan, two blocks away from a big Hezbollah riot the other day. But things are suppressed and things are calm. You know, we got bike racks in front of the place. It's kind of sad in that we used to want to make this a mecca to celebrate elections. We did two elections ago. And after a while, we realized, you know what? Getting a little too controversial. We got enough of security issues, so we're not going to do it. And we didn't. And now there were no riots, so hopefully we'll go back to that. This hour, we're going to be joined by Howie Kurtz in just a few minutes, and Zarna Garg, one of the hottest comedians in the country. When you watch the, and I watched Stephen Colbert, and I watched the Late Show, Late Night Show, with Jimmy Fallon, Late Tonight Show, they're all in mourning. These are comedy shows. Well, instead of comedy on the election and having some fun with the people losing and winning, they are in mourning because they become news shows, partisan news shows. And I'll let you hear some of it, too. Guy who was the last balanced guy was probably Jay Leno. So before we get to Howie Kurtz, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
One of the things I think folks forget about is President Trump had some A-listers, some really great people in his first administration. And quite frankly, I've been around and some of those people have said, I want to come back and I want to help you again, President Trump. Let's finish the job of what we started.
I know there's a lot that want to come back. Jason Miller, that was his comment. Hopefully he'll go too. He's worked very hard over the last 8 years. What would the new Trump team look like? We're going to examine the rumors and use some logic to try to predict the best people at the best spots.
Number two.
One thing that we are clearly already starting to see take place is finger pointing and the blame game. And a lot of that is going to be directed at President Biden. One senior official I just talked to said Biden will hold a lot of blame for it. And frankly, they said he should.
That is CNN's reporting using their sources within the Kamala Harris campaign. Meltdown, finger pointing, reevaluation, the Dems in massive tailspin as they try to figure out how and why Harris fails so spectacularly. Also, how the GOP seems to have held the House, flipped the Senate. Their people, their party have been rejected by their country, and then they embrace the GOP.
Number one.
Donald Trump didn't win just with the MAGA. He won with the centrist, the common sense, the independents in the middle.
Democrats like me always said, you know, Donald Trump has never won the popular vote. Well, he's going to win the popular vote. Donald Trump is not a winner. Well, he was a big winner. I mean, it hurts me to say that.
There you go. That is that is the number one story. Jim Himes weighing in. It happened 4 years since he lost. The comeback is complete for Donald Trump. We look at the voting blocks. He grew. And the Trumpian agenda that will drive America. Howie Kurtz, you've interviewed Donald Trump many times. Did you ever expect this type of comeback, this type of mandate that he's getting?
I didn't expect the magnitude of the victory, but I certainly concluded a few weeks ago that Trump was going to win, in part because when I interviewed him at Trump Tower, Brian, you know, whether you agree with what he said or not, I mean, he was on his game. He was cogent. Everyone was saying, oh, he's exhausted. Well, no, that wasn't the case. But, you know, beyond the politics of it and the complete failure of the Democratic Party to sort of connect with working class voters that used to be once upon a time their base, this is a massive media failure on so many levels, not just failing to call the election properly. We've blown plenty of elections and, you know, the polls are shaky, that kind of thing. To understand what's going on in the country, to understand why Trump voters, some of whom have been attacked by these brilliant, usually left-leaning geniuses, felt that they wanted to vote for Donald Trump, including, as I'm sure you've talked about on the show, including blacks, including Latinos, across the board. It was an amazing coalition. So I was a little surprised at how what a wipeout it was for Kamala and her team.
I'm just going to give you an idea that you already know, but for our audience to know, in 2016, he got 29% of the Hispanic vote. Now it's at 45. Income for people on income under 50,000. You know, those that billionaire that can't relate to everyday people. 50% of those who make under 50,000 voted for him. That was at 41% when he tried in 2016. For black men, it's now at 20%. It started with 13. Romney got 8. Young voters. He now had 42% of those, a Republican, getting 42% of those under 30. This is pretty impressive numbers, and it's very hard to marginalize his supporters and call them racist and sexist, but they're doing it anyway, Howard. Does that blow you away?
It not only blows me away that people are still falling into the trap of attacking essentially half the country, people who voted for Trump. And, you know, some have said or told other pollsters, et cetera, that they don't like some of his behavior, the tweets and the, you know, going off script, shall we say. But they voted for him anyway because they compared the Biden-Harris record to the Trump record, and they decided they liked the Trump record much better. The morning that you talked about, I mean, we better stage an intervention for Colbert and Kimmel because they look like they're going through the seven stages of grief. But I'm seeing that also with a lot of the big name analyst pundits, journalists, commentators who are still attacking Donald Trump rather than, you know, well, you know what, maybe we need to do some soul searching. Maybe we need to talk about why the Democrats have reached this point, why people ultimately didn't trust Kamala Harris or didn't know where she stood, why Donald Trump has this appeal that we don't understand because we thought he is a lying bigot and all the usual, you know, Hitler, all the usual things thrown at him. And then some are trying to honestly grapple with that, but most of them are just like, no, we're not giving up. We're going to fight. This is ridiculous. And I don't say that they should all fold their tents and not battle for what they believe in. But, man, some of them are just sort of their feet are in concrete.
I want you to hear this. This is just a look at what the commentators were saying yesterday, from Sonny Hostin to Rachel Maddow to Jonathan Capehart of on MSNBC. Cut 21.
I'm profoundly disturbed. I'm worried about mass deportation and internment camps. What we did not have is white women who voted about 52%, right, for Donald Trump. Uneducated white women, is my understanding.
These guys on the other side inevitably start picking off individual journalists, individual publishers, individual news organizations to try ultimately to turn us all into some American-accented version of RT.
Can't help but wonder if the American people have given up on democracy.
I'd like to know what that says about us as a country.
What do you say to that?
What it says about us as a country is that it's a different country, a different portrait of a country than the media, most of the mainstream media, Brian, have painted all along. And so, you know, this sort of hand-wringing, I mean, look, it's the media and the Democrats that have said time and time and time again that Trump shouldn't have contested the 2020 election, that you can't only love your country when you win. And now it's kind of flipped. And a lot of them are just in denial. You know, this Donald Trump has done the seemingly impossible. I mean, coming back from the depths of January 6th, he not only wins the nomination, he not only battles the four indictments, which I think ended up helping him. He not only survives two assassination attempts, but he remakes the Republican Party in a way that simply connected with a lot of frustrated voters. And meanwhile, the Democrats, you know, are talking about pronouns and Kamala Harris never quite explained, well, how come 4 years ago she was for opening up the border and now she says she's not?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of soul searching to be done, but especially, you know, this is my beat, by journalists who really became part of the resistance, some might say 9 years ago, certainly in the last couple of years. I mean, the disparity between the just worshipful and gushing coverage for the vice president versus the just unrelenting and constant attacks against Donald Trump. You had the Huffington Post, you know, batter headline, "The Nightmare Returns." And even the New York Times, these are news stories that said, "America picks a strong man." You know, they have not processed this at all.
So the Media Research did this. They did their study just as this came to an end. 78% of the coverage was positive for Harris. 15% was positive for Trump. And I think when they know that, they know how negative they've been. They told us he's Hitler. They told us he's a fascist. They told us he's going to get rid of democracy. And the American people heard it, didn't pay attention, and voted this way. The frustration is off the charts. They mocked him every single night. They got out, they almost got rid of Jimmy Fallon, the public, because he normalized the sitting president at the time, Donald Trump. He's since apologized and tried to overcorrect. Listen to Jimmy Kimmel, his greatest critic, cut 30.
It was a terrible night for women, for children, for the hundreds of thousands of hardworking immigrants who make this country go, for healthcare, for our climate, for science, for journalism, for justice, for free speech. It was a terrible night for poor people, for the middle class, for seniors who rely on Social Security, for our allies in Ukraine, for NATO, for the truth and democracy and decency. And it was a terrible night for everyone who voted against him. And guess what? It was a bad night for everyone who voted for him, too. You just don't realize it yet. But it was a really good night for Putin and for polio and for lovable billionaires like Elon Musk and the bros up in Silicon Valley and all the wriggling brainworms who sold what was left of their souls to bow down to Donald Trump.
You believe this? What do you say?
I'm
going to
take a wild guess and say that Jimmy Gillum is not happy with the outcome. And of course,
he almost
had
cried.
an ongoing feud with Donald Trump, some of which in my previous interview with the former president and future president, I should learn to say, president-elect Trump, I fueled just by asking the question about Kimmel, and then Trump took his head off, and then Kimmel responded. It was a lot of fun. But, I mean, they take this stuff seriously. I mean, the job of these guys is to make people laugh. And, you know, they make people laugh at Donald Trump. You know, the irony here, and I know you get this, is for all of the hand-wringing and tears and, you know, breastfeeding, once Trump gets in office, and especially if he, you know, sticks to popular initiatives, he's going to be good for the media because everybody's going to want to watch again. You know, look, there was like two books written about the Biden presidency and about 500 written about the Trump presidency because he's always making news. He's always controversial.
He talks to the press, Howie. I mean, he talks to the press every day. At one point, he said, forget my press secretary. I will talk to you every day. And he did during the middle of the Russian and all these revelations and then the impeachment. Yes, next. They weren't talking about anything that he was doing positively. They didn't talk about they never talked about the Abraham Accords or anything like that. It was always controversial, and he would stop and talk. You have another guy that never talked to the press that missed his Secretary of Defense in the hospital. He was in the hospital, didn't put somebody in charge, and never knew about it, and the press didn't even say anything, even after they did find out about it. So the double standard is so huge that I think the American people have tuned out, and they voted the way they did. Popular vote and the Electoral College. I mean, it's really hard to object to this result or not conclude that you got huge problems with your messaging and your point of view.
Look at how much of the coverage in just the last week or two has been devoted to, will there be violence? Will Donald Trump accept the results of the election and all that? And of course, it all became moot because he won this sweeping victory, which, as you pointed out, you know, I think it was 48 out of 50 states where Kamala did worse than Biden, or Trump did better than Biden in 2020. And so it now seems clear in retrospect that Joe Biden, you know, whatever he was able to accomplish on the Hill, was hidden from the press, hidden from many of his own staffers, so they wouldn't see the degree of the mental decline. And so, yeah, I mean, even if you went on, if you were a White House reporter, you went on a trip with him, you often just didn't get to lay eyes on him unless you'd see him give him the same speech as everyone else. Kamala made a huge mistake the first month by hiding from the media. Should have done a couple of interviews then. Then she did lots of interviews, and it didn't seem to help her. You know, you could argue that the way she was thrown into it, and, you know, her allies, as I know you're aware, are now saying, oh, it's sexism, oh, it's racism, oh, you know, can a woman ever be elected president? But she made a lot of mistakes, too. On the other hand, she was saddled with the albatross of the Biden record, and that may have been, especially in a short campaign, too much for anyone to overcome.
So Jim Himes said something on CNN I thought was significant. Cut 8.
Democrats like me always said, you know, Donald Trump has never won the popular vote. Well, he's going to win the popular vote. Donald Trump is not a winner. Well, he was a big winner. I mean, it hurts me to say that, but he was a big winner. So what are my Republican colleagues going to take away from that? This is not like, is this the Donald Trump with whom we lost the Senate majority? Is this the Donald Trump with whom we lost the House? No, this is Donald Trump with whom we win big time. So whatever Adam Kinzinger instinct, Liz Cheney instinct existed in the Republican Party, that's gone. That's gone. Donald Trump owns these guys.
So he wanted to see what it was going to be like in the minority. And I think as an analyst, the first two-thirds is right. It killed him. Connecticut congressman, your thoughts?
We're living in Trump's America. And, you know, there was a lot of effort on the part of a lot of media people and some Democrats to say, well, you know, Trump, it was a fluke in 2016. Hillary was a bad candidate, and he kind of lucked out and you know, won enough to get over the 270 mark. Then, of course, we had 2020, and that was in the middle of a pandemic. But nobody can diminish this victory. You can say, look, I still don't like Donald Trump. You can say, I'm still going to oppose mass deportations or whatever is at the top of your agenda. But the idea that he's now won the popular vote, unheard of levels of support. Remember when he went to the Bronx and people just made fun of him, or why is he wasting his time? Well, he actually did better in New York City.
He did.
Which is, you know, one of the bluest cities in the country.
And he did better in the Bronx than any other borough. And he did better in the Bronx than any other borough.
It's time for people to sort of shut up with the attacks, give him a break, let him come into office and see what he can do. And especially for the press, like, it's time to no longer be part of the resistance. It has eroded and really destroyed the credibility of the press. Everybody hates us on both sides now, and a lot of that is our fault.
Well, you were analyzing it, so leave you out of the fray. You're the ones who told everybody about it. Media Buzz is on Sundays at 11 o'clock to 12. Howie, now more than ever, we can't wait to hear this, and hopefully some people will sober up and just give Trump a fair chance. Criticize the policies. Don't say it's Nazi Germany. He's not Hitler. He's a successful politician finishing out his last term. Howie Kurtz, thanks so much.
Thanks. Going to be a great show Sunday.
You got it. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Brian,
yeah.
You and I are undecided voters,
yeah,
but we have to make a decision.
We have to.
This is the week.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do? What are you thinking?
I don't know. The issues, like immigration.
Yeah.
Immigration.
Yeah. That's an easy one. Keep them out. Keep the immigrants out.
Wait, you want to keep the immigrants out?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Isn't that a little bit racist?
Yeah, it's a lot racist. But I'm a discriminating racist. I know who to let in and who to let out. I can give them the list.
Okay. A discriminating racist?
That's right.
I think we just discovered a new voter demographic.
That's right, and I'm happy to be of service.
That is Zarna Gharg doing one of her many tapes. She's a Indian-American stand-up comedian, screenwriter, host of the Zarna Gharg Family Podcast, streaming on YouTube, Apple, and Spotify. And, of course, I got to get her not only to find out what's happened with her, but I want to find out what happened to our comedy, what happened to our late-night comedy. I mean, it's all gone. They're all literally crying. Jimmy Kimmel was crying last night during his monologue. I mean, would Johnny Carson have been crying if he was a Jimmy Carter fan and Reagan, who happened to be his friend too, when Reagan had won, or when Carter won and beat Gerald Ford, vice versa? Would that have been, that was also contentious coming off Watergate? You would say, what's with a comedian crying on that? And you might find out in an interview or a profile where they stood politically. But things have dramatically changed. Hopefully people realize they don't want to take that risk. They're going to realize, you know, I'm going to bring things up. I'm going to be an equal opportunity offender because it's not good for my business to be so labeled. But I'm going to say it's going to be an interesting decision all these shows got to make. Is he going to make Trump the worst person in the world? Because no one's interested. And your ratings reflect that you're not growing your audience, which is getting harder and harder to do because of shows like Zarna Gharg has on YouTube. So don't think you're going to get your 5 million people. They're going to get less and less and smaller. Gutfeld's getting a ton of them. He makes fun of everybody. Don't move.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Jimmy, what are you doing?
I'm packing.
Packing? Are you going on vacation?
No, I'm not going on vacation. I'm leaving the country.
Well, it happened again. After a bizarre and vicious campaign fueled by a desperate need not to go to jail, Donald Trump has won the 2024 election.
Donald Trump has won the 2024 election, and he'll be president again for 4 more years, or 8, or 12, or whatever.
So that is little late-night television. You recognize Jimmy Kimmel, biggest hater of Donald Trump. Not even funny, just goes out to hit him. And then Stephen Colbert lives off it. And one thing he said in his cold open tells the whole story. He's not embarrassed by it. He goes, if you're watching this show, you probably are as upset as I am. So he's saying to our audience, I have no interest. If you don't agree with me politically, I know you're not watching me. And then you saw what happened with Seth Meyers, who they took his band away. So he's a little guilty. He feels a little bad, but they did renew him. And of course, they feel this way. You know, a lot of people would say this is great for me doing stand up because Donald Trump is so different. He provides a lot of energy. But I guess not. Not in today's lineup. With me right now is one of the hottest comedians in the country, Zarna Gharg, one of our great guests She thankfully comes back as an Indian-American stand-up comedian and screenwriter, host of Zarna Garg Family Podcast, streaming on the YouTube, Apple, and Spotify. And I'd plug your live events, but they're all sold out.
Yeah.
I apologize.
Hi, Brian. Namaste. So excited to be back. Yes, good to be here.
Were you surprised by that reaction on Election Day where you could have tons of fun, that answer is simply mourning and anger?
I'm not surprised by that reaction. I mean,
you've been on all those shows, right?
I've been on all those shows, and I know what they're thinking. And there's clearly a big disconnect in the country. One half of the country believes something, and then there's another half that just doesn't see them at all. So, and I've been seeing it as a touring comic. I'm all over the country. I'm in big towns, small towns. I've been seeing, meeting people live and hearing all the things that we heard Donald Trump say. Because he's reflecting the views of cities and states that don't make it to these TV shows. So I was not surprised, but I'm not surprised that a lot of these hosts have no idea that these people exist and feel this way.
Did you grow up? When did you come here?
I came here at 16, and I lived in Ohio for many years. Shout out to Ohio. Great state. I got my college degree and my law degree in Ohio.
So people were writing you. What were they saying after this election result?
They're all writing me that I'm going to get deported. Because in their eyes, we're all illegal. Immigrants are all one category and we're all illegal. And, you know, as an Indian immigrant, especially, you know, my people, the only way we can come here is by following the process to the T. We have to wait in line for years and years, myself included, you know, years. It took about 18 years to get it done right.
Really?
Yeah, of course.
So did you do it in India to come here?
No, here.
Okay, once you were here.
We came as a student, got a job, then left when I fell in love, which was a stupid move. Because why fall in love when you're about to move to America? But it happens.
Okay.
And
you don't blame yourself. You can't.
I blame myself for the falling in love part. You know, for a minute, my head started spinning and I was like, oh, this is a good idea. But got back in line after that. When that happened, stopped everything, left America, thought I was done with America. Life happens. Then came back, got back in line at the back of the line, started all over again. 18 years from beginning to end to the path of green card and citizenship. So, and that's not just me. That's millions and millions of us immigrants who come here, including my Latin friends, including my Hispanic friends, European friends. The assumption that every immigrant and is illegal and legal is all the same.
Well, how do you feel about people taking shortcuts? How do you feel about had 7.8 million people just go through the border?
I have a lot of empathy for them, as I do for a lot of people everywhere in the world. I mean, I have empathy for people in the Middle East going through what they're going. I have empathy for my own relatives back home who have no chance of coming here. So I understand, but there needs to be a system. It is not fair that there is no system and that some people can walk in when others are waiting in line for years and years. That doesn't feel fair.
And that is the number one issue. But the thing is, if I asked you that 8 years ago, I'd be like, well, Brian's a little harsh. Now most of the people are a little upset because they see it's in every city. Texas and Arizona say, yo, by the way, you're going to feel our problem.
Yeah.
Big heart, but do you want them taking over your streets? And sadly, a lot of criminals are coming through.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, because those pathways into America are so treacherous that it's not the weak who can make it through those walking roads and days and days. It's the really strong people who know how to survive those. The Indians wouldn't survive. We eat too many carbs. We would never be able to walk through.
Really?
It's not happening.
That's why you have to do it the right way.
Thank God we know how to code. Thank God.
That's true. Zarna, so you're trying to say is, the Indians do it the right way because they don't really, they eat too much carbs.
They will never
be able to do the border.
We would not
survive. It's not that you have values and ethics.
We would not survive swimming through an ocean. We're not those people. We're not cut out for. Listen, the Indians were colonized for 200 years, right? We didn't even fight. In the end, the British didn't leave because we won a war. They left because they got exhausted of us. They're like, these guys, there's nothing happening here. You know, we're not fighters. When we're really angry, do you know what a really angry Indian person does? They declare a hunger strike.
That's true.
That's like how every Upper East Side mom is living right now.
That is true. I mean, we grew up hearing about Gandhi. He was one of the top five all-time guys. He was upset, so he would...
He marched. He encouraged the whole country to get out there and march. 10,000 steps, he was the original.
Right. Yeah. And that was before the iPhone, as far as you know.
Yes.
Even though I'm surprised. But, you know, you say that a lot of people in India want to get out. They paint India as one of the most, the fastest growing, with the greatest potential democracy in the world. Yeah. Is everyone not feeling that progress in India?
No, they certainly are. And I know a lot of people in America who've gone back to India, started businesses there. But it's a big country, so there are a lot of people who want to live there and build there, who want to come here and build here. There are families that have been split apart. Like in my case, my husband and I, both our families are back home. Now, me personally, I'm looking for who in the Trump administration can put my mother-in-law on the no-fly list.
Hopefully.
Please, can you reach out to your contacts? But whoever can do that, I will do whatever they want for that.
Right.
But so she can stay in India. But there are other people in our families who we would love to bring here if we could.
But just to finish up the late night topic, you heard that that's late night television. Here's Jay Leno.
Yeah.
One of the last fair brokers out there, who an equal opportunity offender. Cut 31.
In my day, you kind of made fun of both sides, and I would get Miss Leno, you and your Republican friends, well, Miss Leno, you and your Democratic buddies. So you get angry letters from both sides, and you go, oh, it's 10 more of this or 5 more of that. So now you kind of have to take a side. And it's a little bit different.
But he was even being judgmental then. Here's more. Cut 32.
The nice thing about this election is it was fair. It was honest. I was not a fan, but that's okay. It's President of the United States. Let's all get together. Thank you very much. It was done perfect. There was no cheating. Everybody says it was honest. I mean, it's a great day for democracy.
Not bad, right? I mean, so far.
So far.
We survived. For you personally, tell everyone your journey, how you ended up to stand up. This was not a likely profession for you.
Yeah, my children dared me. It was a dare from my kids.
Because you were hysterical at home.
Well, I wasn't trying to be hysterical. I was just being me. They found it hysterical. I yell at everybody at all times about what they're studying, what job they plan to have. You know, listen, our generation, my generation, worried about like how you're going to make a living more than anything else.
Right.
And you seeing that, I mean, I think it was my generation, Gen X, that voted in large numbers at this election, which makes sense because we are getting crushed on both sides. We're taking care of our elderly parents and we're taking care of our adult kids who are too busy worrying about, I don't know what they're worried about. These kids are like, everything is a hill they're going to die on.
Right.
Except the hill of having a job.
Right.
Yeah.
And careers was an obsession. There's not an obsession with that in their 20s, right?
No, not at all. They all feel like it's optional because mom and dad are going to step in and, you know, they're not. I'm letting my own kids know we are not stepping in. You need to get out there and get a job. But they dared me to get on a comedy stage and then here I am.
Well, how many years ago is that?
That was 6 years ago.
6 years ago, you walked up there did you have material?
No, I had no material. And the lady who ran the open mic said, why don't you just talk about whatever you find funny? And I figured, let me just trash my mother-in-law.
Right.
Because who doesn't think that's funny?
Right. Except the mother-in-law.
Yeah. Well, she's coming around to it.
Oh.
You know how she came around to it? She thinks she's going to get a cut out of the money I make. And then she's okay.
Right. And so now she like kind of looks forward to it. She's become a character.
Well, yeah. And she sends me jokes. You know, she'd be like, talk about my sister. Do you know what my friend did? What my neighbor did? Talk about all these people.
So she's helping you with material.
Yeah.
So when did you realize you could really do this? Was there any doubt? Did you have any doubt?
No, it was instant. The first day I was on that stage, I was like, you want this? I was like, oh my God, I've been doing this for 20 years for free. Because I was the person who was holding the mic at every Indian wedding, reception, keynote speech. They would just hand me a mic and say something funny. I didn't know that was a thing. I didn't know people would pay money for it.
Right.
I left millions of dollars on the table.
Yeah, you never charged a fee for those weddings.
No.
So you write constantly. So you're putting out a lot of content.
Yes.
So how do you do it? I'm seeing
the old-fashioned way, working 24/7, the way everybody who builds something builds. You have to be obsessed, possessed, and drowning in it. And that's my life. I write constantly. If I'm on an airplane, I'm writing. If I'm not writing, I'm watching a YouTube show on how to learn something new. I'm constantly at it.
Right. And you have a YouTube show right now?
Yeah.
Is that with your family on it?
Yeah, I have a family podcast, the Zarna Garg Family Podcast. It's the first of its kind where we banter as a family. Because we have 3 kids. I'm Indian, very on brand, lots of kids. I have a 21-year-old, I have an 18-year-old, I have a 12-year-old, and I want to know what they're thinking. We've actually done an episode on what kids know about politics. things like just what do you know?
Right.
Because we don't know what our kids know.
Is it conversation or you feel compelled to be funny?
No, it's conversational. It becomes funny because I'm part of it. And that just goes. And my kids also think they're funny. And everybody who watches my podcast seems to be rooting for my husband, which is how the patriarchy wins every time, people. Stop voting for him, because at the end of every podcast, we ask our viewers to vote for who they thought gets the A grade.
Right.
And my husband, somehow, he does nothing. He just sits there, he smiles, and he gets an A grade.
Right, but he still likes you.
Well, I mean, like is a big word.
That's, I don't want to jump ahead. Did you go to the White House?
Yes.
For what?
We covered it as a podcast. All five of us were invited. We showcased the Diwali celebration at the White House. We put together a podcast episode, really guerrilla style. Like, we can do so much with so little. We went with our five phones. We captured the vibe, the decor, the food, President Biden's speech, all the other speeches. We came out of the White House and recorded the episode right outside the White House and prepped it and edited it and released it the next day.
How'd it go over?
So well.
Right.
I mean, the world should know that in America, the American president invited Indians to celebrate Diwali. I think the world should know
that. What is
that
holiday? What is it for?
It's the Indian New Year. It's equivalent to Christmas or Rosh Hashanah. And they did it so beautifully. And we did it as a labor of love. There's no money, of course, in that. And my kids flew in from all over. But we really thought it was a moment. It's a moment that highlights America at its very best.
Isn't this a good time? I mean, for Indian Americans, you have Kamala Harris, the vice president. And they got Usha Vance, the guy who's going to be the second lady of the country.
Yeah, I mean,
does that matter over in India and here?
Of course it matters. And of course it matters to me personally. And Usha, we have high hopes. She looks very elegant. I think she's going to be a big voice in this. She's brilliant. She's brilliant, even though she did a history college major. We'll forgive her for that.
You don't like those majors.
I don't like those majors.
You want something very practical.
I want STEM, but she figured out her way in life, so we won't hold it against her. Usha, even Nikki Haley, she's another one. There's so many Indian women. Kamala Harris.
It's almost too many.
Oh, no such thing. Are you kidding? We're in it. And I believe Kamala Harris will be around, and she will be a force to reckon with. She ran an amazing campaign, and you know, I think she's going to be a voice, and I encourage all of them to speak on behalf of our people.
Do you find that, from what they tell you, your relatives are in India, do they cover it more when there's someone of Indian heritage running? Or
yeah, of course, because they're just curious, and they're curious about the simple things, the same way they were curious about my podcast episode. What was the food like here? They're less consumed by the politics of it. And more like, what was the vibe like? What was she wearing? And, you know, it's a lot of that stuff. So even with, for example, Usha Vance, a lot of it is like, will her South Indian food be served at her residence, wherever they live, when he takes office?
Right.
And people are so curious about little everyday basic facts. And she has little kids. So everybody wants to know, is she speaking Telugu because she's of Telugu South Indian heritage? Are her kids speaking the language? Are they... Indian people in India are just happy to see that they're being represented on this global stage, because it's anything that happens in America is not just America. It affects the world.
Right. That's what a lot of people don't understand.
Oh, I mean, America sneezes and the world catches a cold. I think they used to say that about Canada, but I think it's true for the whole world.
Well, that now we have the pandemic, and now we do believe that everyone does get sick when China sneezes.
Yes.
We'll see. When's the next time people can see you? But you're sold out. You sold it.
I'm sold out, but I do a lot on social media. I'm very active at Zarna Garg everywhere on every platform.
Okay.
And my YouTube show, Zarna Garg Family Podcast. Join us as a family. I encourage everybody to watch our episodes as a family. I'm being told that that's what happens.
What time are you live?
I don't go live. The episode drops every Monday at noon. Every Monday at noon, we drop an episode about whatever is the topic of the hour. And we do have an episode about what kids know about politics, which was eye-opening for us.
Don't you mean what your kids know?
Well, but they talked a lot about what they teach in school, the books they use. Like, we didn't know. We didn't know what kind of messaging they're getting in school. So it was interesting to learn that.
You could follow her everywhere. Zarna Garg, thanks so much for coming in. Truly appreciate it. You can find her at Zarna Garg. Zarna, great to see you. Continued success.
Great. Thank you for having me. Namaste to all your listeners, and thank you, Brian.
And you can stay. She's legal, everyone. Leave her alone. We're not deporting. Back in a moment.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
America has carried on the greatest experiment in self-government in the history of the world. And that's not hyperbole, that's a fact. We're the people. The people vote and choose their own leaders, and they do it peacefully. And we're in a democracy. The will of the people always prevails. Yesterday, I spoke with President-elect Trump to congratulate him on his victory. And I assured him that I'd direct my entire administration to work with his team to ensure a peaceful and orderly transition. That's what the American people deserve.
Wow. Okay. I know they're overemphasizing that because of last time, and that's fine. Go ahead. But I just think it's important that he does that. But for the most part, the thing that's striking to me and to the commentary after, you probably didn't see this. You're all working. You're driving around. But the president basically jogged out there. He looked like a million bucks. He was full of energy, and he half jogged out. And it just leads one to believe that he's thrilled that the vice president, whether they're friendly or not, failed so spectacularly because he was ousted against his will. He said, only God Almighty could oust me, and somebody more powerful, Nancy Pelosi, did it, aided by Clinton and Obama. And guess what? She lost. The only guy to beat him was Joe Biden. And that's the way history will write it. Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't forget, Saturday at 9, One Nation.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.